Hi, I'm Betty Rose, the pinup punisher from Gothenburg, Sweden, and you are listening to Wrestle Life Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Life Radio. My name is Matt Sin.
Who are you again? Hold on. Matt
Sin? I'm the Indie Focus host.
Oh, that guy. Okay, I've heard you before, yeah.
Yeah, I'm filling in for Kyle this week because he's not able to make it.
All right, I got you. I hadn't heard you in a while, so I wasn't sure.
It has been quite some time since I've been on here. But, you know, it's fun. I've missed you guys.
Well, I wish I could say the same.
You know, you guys give me a lot of crap for not being on this, by the way.
Well, we're just over here just slaving away every week, you know. I would say slaving. It's not so bad since we don't have to watch Raw and SmackDown anymore.
It does make it easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes our entire life outlook on life is better.
To be fair, SmackDown's been pretty good.
Yeah, I've heard that. I'm still not watching it.
There has been certain weeks where SmackDown has been very good. But
yeah,
that's okay.
Oh, also, hi, I'm Micah.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, it's actually, hi, Micah.
No. I say what I want.
Okay,
fine. You haven't been here for weeks. You can't tell me what to do.
I guess.
Welcome to our podcast. This is how we run things around here.
Today is March 5th, 2021. And this day in wrestling history, 20 years ago, someone made his debut as a commentator for WWE. Would you like to guess who it was 20 years ago?
2001.
Mm-hmm.
Taz?
That's a great guess. And he debuted shortly after this as a wrestler, if I'm remembering my years right. Mm. But it's really close. If I tell you it's really close, will that help at all?
I mean, no. I only know like four commentators.
Paul Heyman.
Really?
Yeah, so... Okay. I don't know if you remember this or not. This is 2001. So you were five, so probably not. But Jerry Lawler left WWE when he was married to Stacy Carter because she got upset or something. Most people would believe it to be dumb. I don't actually know, but that is the prevailing opinion. Anyway, he left to kind of support her. Then they got a divorce and he came back. So Paul Heyman filled in for him for a while. And
yeah, I don't remember that at all. So it must not have been during my period of watching.
It actually wasn't very long, so, yeah.
So was it with Paul Heyman and JR?
Yeah, it sure was.
Okay. I'm sure that was a great combo, though.
That's the famous line where Paul Heyman goes, "Hey, get away from our table. We're not Spanish."
Oh, that's great.
So, yes. Great stuff.
I would like to look more into that, because I'm sure that was a great combo.
100%. We have boo-koodles of stuff to go over, and as soon as we're done recording here... Make sure you guys tune in tomorrow because we're also going to be recording tonight an AEW Revolution preview with Alex Knight, who's going to be back with us. So we're really excited for that. But first, we got to talk about Dynamite. Shaquille O'Neal, Tully Blanchard, just what all is happening on this show?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Going into this show, I had very low expectations. But, I mean, we'll talk about it, but my expectations were kind of blown out of the water.
I want to say that I honestly think, and you know, you have to sit down and go, man, this Dynamite was really good. Oh, this one was really good. Man, this one was really good. But this might have been my favorite Dynamite ever. Maybe. The Winter is Coming was something else. But my gosh, from moment one, to at the end where Hangman cut a short promo after the show was over, there was no part of this show where I'm like, this is dragging on a little bit, isn't it? No. This whole show was great.
Wait, you're saying Hangman cut a promo and we didn't get to see it?
Yeah, but there wasn't much to it. He's like, I'm going to kill Matt Hardy on Sunday. Everyone's like, yeah. And he's like, I hope to see you all there. Like, it was 60 seconds.
And they're like, the tickets are sold out.
Exactly. So...
Okay.
So, apparently, and I don't know why, but they decided Shaq's going to open this show. And I'm really excited. You said this before we started recording. I don't want to steal it from you, but I'm also excited to see the 15-minute, the quarter-hour breakdowns. Because AEW did 934,000 this week, and as you mentioned, they had to have broken a million at the beginning, right?
I honestly wouldn't put it past them to do 1.1 million.
Yeah.
I think there's probably about 200,000 people that drop out throughout the show. Now, that the 932 is an average.
Yeah.
Right? It is an average. But I'm going to say there was I'm going to be a little bit more broad. Between 1.05 and 1.1 million during the Shaq segment.
Okay.
That's my guess. It hasn't been released yet. We'll see.
I wouldn't be surprised if it hit 1.2.
Yeah, man, it's a big deal. Like, there are people I know that don't watch wrestling. It's like, did you see Shaq go through that table? I was like, yeah, I watch every week. This is my thing.
Yeah, I had a buddy of mine that wanted to go, and unfortunately, tickets were sold out. So, you know.
Yeah, they sold out 1,100 seats, I think.
Yeah.
In which Revolution coming up is going to be the highest capacity they've done since COVID with 1,300 seats.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, before we get into the show, and again, there's a whole lot of cover, so we need to get started. But, you know, my wife and I go to pretty much every show. We've only missed, I think, two since they've reopened, what, 7-ish months ago? And I will tell you that this was the first time since Full Gear that the top of Daily's Place has been open. Because if you see anyone sitting up there, they're generally plants. For like if Darby Allin is coming down or something, you know, because fans don't sit up top. And they had fans this time up there because they had to. They had to open up more seating. So I thought that was a really interesting way to look at it. But 1,100 seats in Daly's Place is still only 20% capacity.
Yeah.
That's not a lot. So for anyone that gives them a hard time, and I haven't really seen anyone doing it, but I want to get ahead of it. Anyone giving them a hard time, that's still 1/5 capacity.
Yeah, and they said that 1,300 is less than 25% still.
Yes, correct.
And we've been there. They're super strict on mask. They're super strict on people staying seated. They're super strict on basically like if you – there's like rubber bands grabbing seats. If you touch a rubber band, you're getting kicked out.
Yeah.
If you repeatedly take your mask off, you're getting kicked out. We've seen it. We've seen the people get kicked out of the show.
Yeah.
If you don't stay in your seat, you get kicked out. We saw the guy rush Jon Moxley. He's never coming back.
No.
It's as safe as humanly possible. And, I mean, you can't fault him for that, man, because, like, I know, like, me, since this pandemic, you know what I've done? I've went to work. All of my vacation days have been spent going to Jacksonville, seeing my brother here and his wife, Carol, and going to AEW pay-per-views. Like, that's been pretty much my whole thing since COVID started. And I'm glad they're doing it because it's given me something to do and something to look forward to.
Right.
And I think that's really important for a lot of people. So,
yeah.
Get off their backs.
Yeah, exactly. And again, they're being smart about it, right? It's not saying, hey, we can fit 5,500 in here. Let's just do 5,500. And mask are optional. No, it's not the way they're doing it. They're doing it smart. They're doing it. They're opening it little by little. You know, when they first started, they were at 15%. They're at something like 22.5% is going to be this Sunday.
They could fit way more people safely.
They absolutely
honestly.
Could. And they sold out in like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's not about money. They're doing it to give people an outlet. So I think it's good. I don't know how we got on that. Let's talk about Dynamite.
I don't know. Just had to get it off my chest there.
Perfectly fine. As soon as the Dynamite theme song ends, Cody's song immediately hits. We get Cody and Red Velvet. Then Jade Cargill came out, and I don't know how it came off on television. You'll have to tell me. But live, it was freaking awesome. You can tell that they really think she's a star.
Yeah, she had a really cool entrance. Red Velvet had a really cool entrance, and new ring gear, worth noting.
Her gear was awesome.
Her gear looks like it's made by the same person as Britt Baker's, because it looks super, like, high quality.
Yeah.
It's like that velvet suede material. Red Velvet, I guess that's her name. But
makes sense.
Yeah, really, really good-looking gear. Jade came out with really good-looking gear. It seemed like they really put a lot of work to make this seem like a star-studded match, and it really came off that way.
Yeah. And of course, Shaq came out, and his song was very fitting. My beautiful wife mentioned that it was very fitting, and it was. It made him seem like a monster, and my gosh, like, I see Luchasaurus and Wardlow, Jake Hager. I see them all the time, like, regularly, once or twice a month, right? Shaq comes out, and he's just a monster.
He, like, had to bend down to go through the entrance tunnel.
He is so huge. And I forget seeing people like him and Big Show and Kane. Like, even these other giant men just don't compare. He's huge. He's so big.
He's 7'1" is what they said on commentary.
Yeah.
And not only that, seeing him next to Red Velvet was hilarious.
Yeah.
Red Velvet is great, but she's about 4'11". And you got to think that's like 2 feet between her and Shaq. I wish that this were the type of mixed tag where they could have had at it.
Right.
I think it would have been great.
Just her trying to forearm him in the head, but she can't reach him.
Yeah, or maybe like Marco Stunt runs out. The Austin gunshot spot should have been Marco Stunt. That would have been great.
I suppose.
He had a match later in the night. I guess that wouldn't have worked. But.
So let's talk a little bit about this match, because lots of things happened. First of all, give me your impressions of Shaquille O'Neal.
So it's hard to say that he's the best celebrity spot in wrestling we've seen, since we did have Pat McAfee.
Right.
Who did a fantastic job not very long ago. But he's definitely the most surprising, because I thought he was going to go in there and be bumbling and not really know what he's doing and make some missteps. And honestly, because like, he's a big guy and he's an older guy, there are wrestlers, looking at you, Big Show, who get older in age that stumble around and just don't look fluid in the ring, but he really looked good. You could tell he put in a lot of work. I mean, he's a world-class athlete. He's one of the greatest of all time in the NBA. So obviously, he's a natural athlete. He's going to do well, but I did not expect him to do as well as he did. I think if he gave it a little bit of work, he could be a professional wrestler. Like, that could be something that Shaq could do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's such an interesting thing, because his knees are shot, right? So I'm like, I don't know how he's going to be able to go out there and, you know, pick up. Cody's not a small man, right?
Yeah, he's, what, 230? Something like that?
It's a lot of weight. And Shaq was tossing him around pretty easy. Now, of course, with Cody's help. But he did a powerbomb, and with the, did you see the Brody Lee tribute?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice. Yeah, oh, my gosh. Great. It was so good. You can tell this guy has respect for wrestling, and he absolutely loved it. This was 99.9% perfectly booked. I hated the gun club spot.
Yeah,
but I thought everything else was just spot on. I mean, just amazing. So go over, and first of all, Jade Cargill and Red Velvet were freaking amazing, and we know Cody is. Like, we don't have to tell anyone that's listening to this that Cody's great. Like, we don't have to. Jade Cargill and Red Velvet we knew was amazing. Jade Cargill was something else.
This is her first televised match.
Yeah, something else, man. Like, sure, could Red Velvet carry her to a good match? Yes, but I don't feel like she had to.
Yeah, I feel like, man, looking at the women's division, there's a lot of people who are great wrestlers, but if there's one person on the roster who has the it factor, the to equate it with WWE, which I know some people hate, but to equate it with WWE, that has that Charlotte Flair, Asuka, Sasha Banks, like, top female star, man, Jade Cargill really pulled it off this match. She did overplay the heelishness a little bit. Like, she did do a little bit too much posturing, but she is a heel, so it's kind of her thing. But I kind of feel like she was falling back on it when she didn't know what to do, which is smart. It's better than just standing there like an idiot.
Right.
But there was some really good technical stuff I saw from her in this match. And she is intimidating, and she's a very attractive person.
Yeah.
I think she's got really the whole package of what makes a professional wrestling star.
Yeah, she really does. And, you know, the women were in this match significantly longer than the men, which makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Because they're both wrestling trained. Shaq is not going to go in there and put on a 20-minute clinic. It's just not happening.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a spot. Let's talk about the only bad spot in the match. And it wasn't bad because it was entertaining. It just didn't fit, right? It's like if you're watching a movie. Like, my wife pointed this out, actually, about Frozen 2, so I want to use it as an example. It's like Frozen 2, right? The movie's fine, but there's the Kristoff where his song, probably the best song in the movie, but it did not fit. None of it made any sense. So there's your Frozen 2 reference in your wrestling podcast. So basically, Shaq gets knocked to the outside, and Austin Gunn grabs a chair, and the babyface faction attacks Jack with a chair, who turns around and just destroys him and Colton. Yeah, which is fine. Like, that's exactly what should have happened. But, like, you can't be a babyface and decide to attack someone with a chair. It made absolutely zero sense.
It is a bit confusing. It's also confusing when Shaq is a giant natural babyface.
Right.
Look at the guy when he walks out. You're just like, oh, that looks like a fun guy. He just had a good time. Like, he's not intimidating. He's trying his best to be intimidating, but, like, even though he's 7'1", maybe it's just something he's had to do his entire life. He's looked just so approachable and nice. I don't know. But he got some natural babyface vibes to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he is very likable. And everyone that watches him and knows him and watches him in other things, like, unless he's on the court and he's, you know, the opposition to your team, basically everyone likes Shaq. This is the way it works. Let's get to the big spot. So Jade Cargill and Red Velvet set up a table, or set up two tables, actually. They were very crooked, so funnily enough, I have no idea if this was shown on television or not, but QT Marshall and the Guns were over there fixing the tables and setting them up.
Yeah, so Red Velvet was trying to set the table up, and
She's too short.
She's struggling a little bit because she's too short. She got to get that motion to flip the table over. So QT comes over and helps her. And I knew, like, the table wasn't sitting right, and I was like, oh, dear God, please fix the table. And they never showed it, but when it cut back, the table was fixed, so I figured QT did it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, because it was, like, cocked up on the other one, and I was like, oh, that's not going to work. That's going to hurt somebody's butt bone, like, right when they hit that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it didn't come off on TV at all, which is good on the cameraman.
It was really funny because QT Marshall just, like, goes over there and helps it. And Austin Gunn is, like, half dead because he's been destroyed by Shaq. And he's, like, on the other side. He's fixing it as he's pulling himself up on the table, selling the spot. It's actually really well done.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. But, yeah, so basically, Shaq goes over to the side and stands in front of the tables. And Carol looks at me and goes, they're not about to put Shaq through a table, are they? And I'm like, no, they're just teasing it. Then he goes back to his corner, and I'm like, see, they're not going to put Shaq to the table. Then he goes back out there again, and I'm like, okay. So Cody pokes him in the eye, and he runs off the ropes. And I'm like, okay, well, Shaq is about to, you know, pull the ropes down or flip Cody over or something. Cody's going to slam through the table. Nope. Cody just cross bodies over the top rope, and the two of them smash through a table. They've absolutely practiced this because it was so perfect. Like, Cody landed right
aerial. What an aerial move by Cody.
I know. It's crazy. He's like on top of Shaq, like over his head, checking on him. And that's basically how he landed. It was such a perfect spot. It was so good.
Yeah. I was really surprised. Like, I thought the same thing as you when I saw him in the middle. Like, he's in the way of the camera, like the hard camera. And I was like, okay, he's not. I know Shaq well enough. He knows TV. He's not in front of the hard camera for no reason, right?
Right.
And then he moved back. I was like, I don't know. Maybe he is kind of confused of where to go. I don't know. He moved back in place. And I was like, okay, Shaq's going through the tables.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've never seen a table explode like that.
Right.
Like, it went, I don't know if you've rewatched it on TV. It went everywhere. It just crumpled. It was perfect. It looked so safe. And you can even see Shaq doing the thing where he like double taps Cody to let him know he's okay. Which is just, you know, I guess something you taught him. Just really cool. Like, Shaq came off like a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
It's not a great one, but a decent one.
Yeah.
It's more than you could ask for.
That powerbomb was amazing. The power bomb was so good. It was interesting because, you know, they call him Shaq Diesel, right?
Yeah.
And he reminded me so much of Kevin Nash in this match with the side knees and the powerbomb.
The bad knees.
Exactly. Yes. It was great. Jade Cargo gets the pin, by the way, on Red Velvet.
With a face buster.
Yeah.
Finishing move.
It was Beth Phoenix's finisher.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was a really good combination they had to end the match too. I think I really want to see Serena Deeb versus Jade Cargill at some point in the near future.
Yeah.
Because I think Serena Deeb brings out the best in female competitors.
Right.
And I think that could be a very, very good match.
Yeah, absolutely. After the match, they put, Yeftimus came up on TV. They put Shaq on a stretcher and like load him in an ambulance And then, like, he gets out of the ambulance and runs away. And then we go to Tony Schiavone, and he's like, I'm here to check on Shaq. Who's like, he's like there as Shaq is running away, right? He's like standing right there. And then they put the camera on Tony. He's like, I'm here to check on Shaq and see if he's fine. Then he opens the door. He's like, oh, there's nobody here. What happened? Oh, no. And I'm just like, why? Why was this segment on TV? Like, it was hilarious, but I don't get it.
I was very confused. I thought for sure he'd come back at the end and attack the Big Show or something.
Yeah.
The end of the match, Shaq's on the ground. They go to commercial break. We come back and they show a little shot of Shaq being loaded into the ambulance in what had to be the biggest gurney of all time.
Right.
And then they cut to the commentary desk and they say, oh, we got Tony Schiavone there at the ambulance about to interview Shaq. And he's going up to the ambulance. And I'm like, okay, well, the door's shut. Something's about to happen.
Yeah.
And he opens it up and kazam, Shaq is gone.
How long have you been waiting for that joke?
He's been using his Kazam powers. see, what people don't realize is that AEW doesn't have their own Undertaker, but they do now. And his name is Kazam. So Shaq is going to be coming back at Revolution as Kazam. I would like to see him be the sixth man in the ladder match, come out with his supernatural powers, maybe teleport some ladders away from people, like have them just disappear in midair. I think that'd be great. But yeah, I have no idea. Like, what's going? Why are they insisting that Shaq disappeared? Like, yeah. There were paramedics in there. Were they just like, oh, he's a big man, I'm gonna let him go?
Yeah.
Or are they saying that he has taken them all to the Shadow Realm? Or I don't know.
So
I don't know what they're trying to sell here.
People want Big Show versus Shaq, but I want Kazam versus Captain Insano.
Yes, let's do it. Yeah. Honestly, I don't want Big Show versus Shaq. I don't think that would be a very good match. I want Shaq versus Marco Stunt. I want Big Show versus Marco Stunt. Those would be much more entertaining.
Mm. Yeah, it was. All kidding aside, though, like, it was weird that he was gone. Like, it didn't make any sense.
It was. And they didn't pay it off in the entire episode.
No.
Like,
maybe they will in the future.
Maybe.
We'll see. Pac and Phoenix beat D3 and John Skyler in like 2 minutes. And it was exactly what it needed to be. You just had this long, almost 20-minute match where everyone just, you know, emotionally everyone was drained, right? Because you had this crazy match. You didn't know what was happening with Shaq. And then Rey Fénix and Pac just fly around the ring for 2 minutes. And it was so good and so re-energizing. It was perfectly placed on this card.
Yeah, I had no idea this match was even happening on the card, and I saw them come out, and I was like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah.
And then I saw who they're facing, and I was like, oh, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
They're just going to have Pac and Phoenix out here doing some crazy stuff, and then they're going to win in less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, but fine.
Yeah, that's the way you should do it.
Yeah. Like, I'm sitting here, and I'm like, well, this is a throwaway match, but it's not, because it's so entertaining, because they're so good. It's basically Cirque du Soleil for 2 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever safe to say that a Pac or Phoenix match is a throwaway match.
Exactly. It's just so good. MJF and Jericho's next. Do you want to go? There's a lot to unpack here. Would you like to tell us about it, or do you want me to do it?
I don't know if I can unpack everything.
Okay.
I can get the highlights.
Yeah, go for it.
So MJF and Jericho are there in kind of the same situation as the debate with Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho.
Right.
Dasha's there being the moderator. And they're just accepting questions from the audience as a press conference going into Revolution. They have a few journalists in attendance. Conrad Thompson comes out. And MJF, he asks MJF, what does he ask him? Do you remember? He didn't answer the question. But he basically asked him, why did he do that?
Oh, about Sammy Guevara. Yeah, he asked him about bringing Sammy Guevara back.
Yeah, he said, now that things have kind of calmed down, have you guys thought about bringing Sammy Guevara back? MJF insulted him. Chris Jericho insulted him. And then he just looked sad and walked away.
We do need to say exactly what MJF called him.
Turkey tits.
Yes.
He called him turkey tits.
It was the funniest thing.
I don't even know what that means, but it was funny.
Yeah, it's like it didn't make any sense, but it was terrific.
Yeah. Poor Conrad. He's raking in all the money. He's fine. They then had a guy from the Barstool Sports section, which I think is somehow related to Turner or Warner or something.
Yeah.
And I think he asked why they did what they did. Nope, that was... What did he ask? I don't remember who asked what.
I don't remember who asked what either.
It doesn't matter. He asked something, they mocked him.
Yeah, basically what happened the whole time, until Eazy-E shows up, Eric Bischoff was there.
Yeah, that's
important.
That was the real part of the segment. They come out and they ask, and he asks if they know how Papa Buck is doing after last week's attack. Chris Jericho says he doesn't care what condition he's in. All he cares about is the fact that he got what he deserved. What did Young Bucks think bringing their dad here? Blah, blah, blah. I think Santana then got on the mic and was like, yeah, man, that's really dumb to bring your dad to Dynamite when the Inner Circle is here. You had to know that we're going to do anything possible to get at you.
Right.
And I was like, you got a point, but maybe don't be such bad people, Inner Circle. And then the Young Bucks music hits. And they come out and they're cutting a promo on their way into the ring. And I'll just say, I've never thought the Young Bucks to be promo guys.
Yeah.
But this was the best promo I've seen them make.
I actually think Matt is a really good promo.
Even Nick, though. I think Nick was good in the segment. He didn't say much. I thought what he did say actually had a lot of fire to it, which is unusual for him. He's very monotone and kind of funny, really. He's more like the comedy guy to me. MJF and Jericho also made fun of Matt and Nick. What did he say about Matt? He said Nick was not so slick, wish my hair was thicker, Nick Jackson, or something like that. He said something about Matt, too. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But Nick and Matt basically came out and cut a... I feel like promos are always better when they're kind of real, right? When they're kind of...
Right.
They're part truth. And I really think they just spoke from the heart. They talked about everything their dad had done for them, how if it weren't for their dad, they wouldn't be who they are today. They wouldn't be the Young Bucks, because their dad, with the little money they had, made them their own ring in the backyard. He always supported them in everything they did. And they even went on to say, without their dad, there probably wouldn't be an AEW.
Right.
And MJF's kind of over there laughing, and they're like, oh, really, MJF? You're laughing, but if there's no AEW, what happens with MJF? Oh, right, you're probably still working the whatever they said. They didn't say indies. They said, like charity halls or something, and living in your parents' basement. And Jericho, where would you be? Oh, that's right, probably working the curtain at the performance center. And a lot of people had issue with that line.
Yeah, those people were dumb. It was
because they're like, oh, he's burying a legend. If they're saying that he's not even as good as enough to be on NXT, then what does that say about AEW and he's your world champ? Shut up. I mean, come on, man. This is kayfabe, right? If he were legitimately saying in a non-kayfabe interview that Chris Jericho sucks and is a terrible wrestler, it's one thing. But in kayfabe, Chris Jericho just attacked their dad and left him bloodied on the step. They can say whatever they want to Chris Jericho. You know why? Because Chris Jericho got heat last week, and now the baby faces are coming out on top, at least for now. So I don't agree. I don't understand why people are like that. Like, oh, man, you can't just bury somebody like that. It's not burying. It's called having a feud.
Correct.
I mean, they can't just come out there and wag their fingers at him and be like, you know what, Chris Jericho, I really didn't appreciate what you did last week. I love you. You're a great wrestler. You're one of the top guys. I mean, it's just, come on. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Predictably, it did in a huge brawl.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of unpredictably, Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson actually came out to help the Bucks. They set up some tables. They held down Santana and Ortiz on tables, and Nick climbed onto the entrance ramp and did a swanton from there, and then Matt dove from the stage onto the ground with a flying elbow. So I don't know why Santana and Ortiz are the ones to get put through tables here. It should have been MJF and Chris Jericho, but, you know, hey, somebody, I guess. They'll take anybody.
It's other people from the faction. I think it makes sense.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it also, I think, kind of lends to the story of Chris Jericho and MJF running away and leaving Santana and Ortiz, which may lead to some more dissension between them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I really like this segment. I love when they have these... They're not just promos, right?
Right.
It seems like real heat between two teams leading into a pay-per-view. I just really think that's just perfect. And I think they executed it perfect here.
The reason that you really like this and it seems so unique is because in the WWE, generally, and not always, but I don't want to bury them, but generally, if someone is fighting for a title, that's mostly the story. Especially when it comes to tag titles and lesser titles. It does with world championships, a lot of times they have, you know, an actual story thread, but like, I don't remember the last time there's been an actual storyline for a WWE tag team title. So that is probably why. I mean, this is a real blood feud storyline, and it's for not the world championship, and it just seems unique.
Yeah, and also, I said at the beginning, I don't care to see MJF and Chris Jericho versus the Young Bucks, but now I want to see the Young Bucks kick their head off.
So right.
It right. works out.
Yeah, it's great. So that segment was fun. And then we get this video of, I studied Japanese for a very small amount of time, and I want to make sure I'm not butchering this name. It's Atsushi Onita.
Yeah.
I've been a wrestling fan since I was a little boy. I've never heard of this guy, but apparently he is like a hardcore legend in Japan.
Yeah, he is the one that had the barbed wire. He had a bunch of barbed wire death matches, exploding barbed wire death matches, but he had the one big one against Terry Funk.
Right.
In Japan as well.
Yeah. So he basically just said he basically had a promo on how dangerous the match was. And there was no Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley on the go home show. So that was a little weird, but this was great because people that don't know what a barbed wire exploding death match is, now they do.
Yeah.
And they know what
they
expect.
They showed clips of it. They kind of explained. So I've heard differing reports. Excalibur said that the ropes will be wrapped in barbed wire, and JR said the ropes will be replaced with barbed wire.
I believe they're going to be replaced because that's what it looked like in the video.
That's what barbed wire death matches traditionally are.
Yeah.
So that curious to see how that works.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, it's going to really limit what they can do in the ring.
Yeah, but they're just going to murder each other.
So, I think, honestly, a lot of it's going to be a technical match as well.
Yeah.
I think it's going to really start out the first half like a technical match, and they're going to ramp their way up. Because you got to think, they're going to try to not get thrown into the barbed wire. How do you do that? By getting on the ground and doing some technical wrestling.
Right.
So that's the way I think it's going to go. That's the way I would book it.
I think they'll probably have a lot of almost going into the barbed wire.
Yeah.
But I fully expect to see Kenny Omega V-trigger and Jon Moxley to move and for him to go fly right into the barbed wire, 100%.
Yeah, that's definitely going to happen.
Yeah. So it was a cool little video. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Okay, so Tully Blanchard's return is next. FTR and Tully with J.J. freaking Dillon. For those of you that don't know that name, he was the Four Horsemen's manager.
And he looks the same that he did in the 90s.
He looks exactly the same.
Like Arn does too. Arn's been 45 since he was born. But J.J. Dillon also looks the same, and he's got to be 30 years older.
Yeah. And so it's FTR versus Tully Blanchard, or with Tully Blanchard and J.J. Dillon as their manager. It was terrific. Then we get Jurassic Express.
Tully Blanchard and FTR come out with the old NWA belts as well.
Right. Yeah. Then Tully Blanchard said that he never lost that belt. I don't know the history behind that, but pretty cool.
I believe it.
Beautiful title. Yeah. and then Jurassic Express comes out. This match was super, super fun.
It was.
Like, I really liked it. There was a spot where Tully pretended he was going to do a suicide dive, and he just stops and waves his hand off. It was a spot where J.J. Dillon takes off a shoe and gives it to Dax, who smashes, I believe it was Jungle Boy, over the head. It was good. This is also a very well-booked match, don't you think?
I think it was too, yeah. I really liked this match. I didn't expect much of it. And let's be honest, Tully wasn't the greatest in the ring. I mean, he did a couple things. Well,
he is 67.
He's great for somebody his age.
Right.
But again, it was above expectations.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the fact that he could do anything in the ring, he's better than I am in the ring.
Yes, true.
I've never been in a ring, but I know he is.
Yeah, there was one spot where Luchasaurus did a German suplex onto Cash, who was holding Dax, and it was like this double German suplex. It was such a cool spot. And the end of the match, which I'm a little torn on, and I'd like to know your opinion, showed Tully Blanchard pinning Luchasaurus for the 1-2-3. Now, how we got there was this masked cameraman smashes Luchasaurus in the head. So it's not like it was
Then they hit the spike pile driver as well.
Yeah. So it wasn't a clean pin, but Tully Blanchard, who's 67, just pinned one of the most over guys in the company.
A 6 foot five dinosaur.
Yeah.
So an actual dinosaur pinning a 6 foot five dinosaur.
So again, I think it was fine in context, but if people have an issue with it, I do understand why.
So it wasn't going to be Jungle Boy, for sure.
Right.
Right. To begin, I feel like Jungle Boy was the fall guy out of Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. That is no longer the case. Jungle Boy is the future star.
Yeah.
So it wasn't going to be Jungle Boy. If they went with Marco Stunt, first of all, I don't know if he could do a spike pile driver on Marco Stunt. I think he's too short. Like,
I don't think his head would hit the ground.
I don't think his head would hit the ground. Like, literally, I don't think they could do it. Yeah. I mean, technically, their heads never hit the ground. In best case scenario, I don't hate it in the whole context, but if you kind of pick it apart, it does begin to look a little strange.
Right.
I mean, it took four people to take him down, so it's not the worst.
Right. Turns out that cameraman was Sean Spears, by the way.
Yep, coming back with no facial hair and blonde mohawk.
Yeah, hair looked weird, but I don't care. I love Sean Spears. He can do whatever he wants.
I kind of like it.
Really?
Yeah, I kind of dig it, especially if they're going with the whole Four Horsemen angle.
I also didn't realize how big he was because I'm like, that's Sean Spears. Oh, no, it's not because he's towering over FTR. Oh, yeah, it's definitely Sean Spears. Like, it's just gigantic.
FTR are regular dudes.
Yeah, they're just, normal height. After the match, they all held up the four symbol, and then Arn Anderson comes out of the tunnel, kind of nods in approval, holds up the four symbol, and turns around and walks away.
Mm-hmm. That was weird.
It was weird, but I guarantee you they're paying this off, because either Cody's not going to like it, and it's going to cause dissension, or Cody's going to be the leader of the new Four Horsemen.
Man, that would be kind of a slap in the face to Dusty, huh?
You think so? Well, yeah, because he
was always getting beat up by the Four Horsemen.
That's right. he booked it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm talking in kayfabe.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know how I feel about Cody and the Four Horsemen, right? I feel like he's the perfect foil for the Four Horsemen.
Right.
But he's such a good heel, too, man.
Yeah.
He's so good as a heel. I don't know. What I want, whenever they do the Four Horsemen, I want the Four Horsemen to have the TV title, the TNT title as it's known, and the tag titles, right? I don't feel like right now is the time for that. Maybe they could lead to that. Maybe I don't know how long they could build this up. I'm sure they could do a while. I would love for Sean Spears to have the TNT title.
Right.
Like, I think he 100% would be great for it, and I think he deserves it. FTR, I don't want FTR to have the tag belts so quickly. Back from the Young Bucks. I don't think they need to hotshot them back and forth between anybody.
Sure.
I think it's a bad look. I don't know, man. I don't know. I think the Fourth Horseman is going to be a swerve, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get Cody taking his paternity leave, that introducing Arn Anderson to the Four Horsemen, giving him something to do, and then finally the Four Horsemen doing whatever they're going to do, and then Cody coming back to fight them. That's how I would book it. Okay. Cody coming back for the big return, having lost his manager to the Four Horsemen, the heel faction, with, QT and Dustin and all that. I don't know who a fourth fit is, though. I know we've had conversations about it before.
Yeah. Well, MJF was the obvious one, but not anymore.
Yeah, I don't think MJF fits in that piece anymore.
No.
Hangman's not turning heel.
No.
Like, ever. So that's not a thing. Hangman would be great with him, but he's not turning heel.
Right.
I would love to see Nick Aldis come back.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. He could lead the thing.
Yeah. But we'll see. We'll find out.
Yeah. Paul White's up next, wearing the worst shirt I've ever seen in my life.
It's so bad.
It was so stupid.
Actually, so there's two things that I heard about at work today about this show. Number one was Shaquille O'Neal. Number two was how bad Big Show looked.
He's wearing a shirt named that said "No More BS," which, you know, double entendre, no more Big Show, ha ha ha. It was awful. It's awful. It's just
an ugly letters. Shirt, and yeah. He looks like such a 1990s dad. He looks like our dad
with right. He kind of does
with his t-shirt tucked into his blue jeans. It was definitely a dad look. I didn't see if he had on white sneakers, but I bet he did.
He's 2.5 feet taller than our dad, though.
It's true.
Here's a video. I'm going to let it play when we're talking to see if it shows the sneakers. here's what happened. The big show, Paul White was like, "Hey, who saw this swerve happen?" Ha 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 ha. I'm like, yeah, that's a good shout. And so he basically said, "Hey, I'm going to be on the new show, AEW Evolution," because he said it wrong.
Yes, he did. But some people are saying, is that a hint?
Right.
It's not a hint.
Actually, I think he said Elevation, and then he said this Sunday at Evolution.
Yeah.
That there will be a brand new Hall of Fame talent that is going to sign a multi-year contract.
To be fair, he said AEW. Hall of Fame worthy talent.
Right.
Which I think is quite different.
Correct.
It narrows it down. I don't think they are in the Hall of Fame, or else they would say Hall of Fame.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So I'm excited to see who it's going to be. And if you want to know our thoughts on it, tomorrow on our AEW Revolution preview show, Micah, Alex Knight, and I are going to talk about it.
Yes, I'm fully expecting you disappointed.
Cody just said that they don't want to do any hype any longer that doesn't deliver. So if it's someone like Ethan Page or Zelina Vega, who would both be wonderful in AEW, but like people are expecting like CM Punk or Kurt Angle, right?
If somebody's getting signed, everybody thinks CM Punk every time.
That's true. But like no one saw the Big Show, right? So this could be a big name. It could.
Yeah. It better be a wrestler. That's all I got to say about it. Find out more tomorrow on our show.
Nyla Rose and Ryo Mizunami. Is next. What did you think of this match?
I'm sure, again, just like when I was talking about the Japanese Cup, I'm sure this match was for somebody, but that somebody is not me.
See, I was expecting that. I love this match, but I knew you were going to hate it. It's so weird.
It's so weird. It's so over the top. It's not my style.
Yeah.
I don't care for it. I think Nyla did a fine job, and I think Ryo Mizunami is a very good wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just not for me. It's not.
Right. It was weird. There were a bunch of spots in here. Ryo's dancing everywhere, and it was strange. Like, I don't really know how to explain it. It was just weird. But I will note that...
She was miming at one point.
Yeah. The match was awesome. She hit multiple middle and top rope leg drops to put away Nyla. Like, it was good. The match, the wrestling in the match was really good. After it was over, Sheeta gets in the ring with the trophy, looking freaking awesome in her white suit.
Yeah, my wife freaked out for her. I know. She was like, oh my God, that outfit is so cute.
And so she gives her the trophy. Ryo bows deep, showing lots of respect. And then the forearms are in the face. And so they're just forearming each other back and forth. Sheeta overcomes Ryo. And this wasn't like a heel thing to do. Like it almost came off to me like it was like a sign of respect. Like, I know you can take this and I can't wait to get in the ring with you kind of thing.
It kind of reminded me of what they've been doing with Rey Fénix and Lance Archer.
Yeah.
Like they're both coming off as faces who just want to fight.
Yeah.
I thought that was probably the best part of this segment was that. I really liked it. I think Sheeta looks like $1 million.
Right.
It looks like a real champion out there. I thought it was great.
This is interesting to me because I don't think Ryo is not your next AEW Women's Champion, right? Like, we're going to talk about it, and I don't want to spoil anything, but, like, it's interesting to me because Sheeta is now the longest reigning AEW champion ever, and I'm surprised that they're not giving it to someone else.
Yeah, I don't know why they did this. I don't know why Ryo Mizunami is facing her revolution.
I really expected it to be either someone from the American bracket or Yuka Sakazaki. Because Yuka is going to be a star in this company.
Yeah, I think so. I fully expected Britt Baker to win and then take the belt at Revolution. I don't know why they didn't pull that trigger.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, maybe, I've heard people say maybe Britt doesn't want it. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate too much on the show. It's a review show, but
yeah,
it's a weird decision.
Yeah. We'll talk about it more tomorrow. So, we go to Sting and Shivani, and I loved this. I really did. And I want to know your opinion on it. This was, I mean, it's not just Sting talking to Tony and then Taz coming out and going, oh, you've got a bat, we're not going to fight. Like, that happened for like 6 weeks in a row. It was way too much. There was actual action. This is the third week of action that this has been in. And I've seen multiple people say it, so I'm going to give them credit. I heard this specifically from Simon Miller, and I'm going to repeat it. This segment made me go, or if the segment is supposed to say, now I want to see this match, I want to buy this pay-per-view, it did the job. And I thought the same thing, because like, I love Sting anyway, huge fan of Darby Allin, love all of Team Taz, but it was just so well put together.
Yeah, I liked this segment for what it is.
Yeah,
It could have done without the 8 to 12 months of buildup that it's had.
It has been a while.
That's my whole thing. They started this feud way too early.
Yeah, in December.
Yeah, and as soon as this match is done, I never want to see FTW or Team Taz or whatever they're calling yourself and Darby Allin in the same ring again.
Right.
Ever. Like, just take them away from each other. Dear God, please. Ricky Starks was great in this. He's for sure a future star.
He basically came out and said, Sting, you know what? We were wrong. You are great. You know what? You're not the icon. And slaps him across the face.
Yeah. And it was a real slap.
Yeah.
And so I don't think Steve Borden appreciated that.
Nope. Sting punches him. Then Team Taz comes out and they start to, you know, pile on Sting. But of course, Darby Allin comes out for the save. And he's like, he jumps on Brian Cage's back. Like, Sting clears the ring of all everybody other than Brian Cage, right? So Darby jumps on Brian Cage's back. He's got his arms around his neck like, you know, someone that can't fight in an old movie, right?
Yeah.
And so he gets him in the corner and turns around and Sting's charging at him. So he jumps off and we get a Stinger splash to the back of Brian Cage. It's such a cool visual. Like, this whole segment was great. It made Sting and Darby Allin look like $1 million.
How weird does Brian Cage look in a t-shirt, though? He doesn't look like a man built for clothing.
we're gonna move past that.
He should be in his wrestling gear 24/7.
Full
gear. Going to Target in his wrestling gear.
If I look like Brian Cage, I might go to Target in my wrestling gear.
I mean, honestly, like, that's probably the only clothes he could get off the shelf. I don't think that t-shirt's a normal t-shirt. It's probably tailored.
Yeah. He doesn't go to Target to buy clothing. He goes to buy food.
Yes, that is true.
Just eggs.
just a bunch of eggs and all the meat they have.
Mm. Tim versus Max Caster is next. And I thought that Max Caster's rap was fine.
It's a bit dark, wasn't it?
Wait, why?
He's a heel. He talked about Lady Gaga's dog walker getting shot.
That's right. I forgot about that.
He talked about somebody who got their face burnt off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit dark, but hey, he's a heel, so I guess nothing.
Push the envelope, man.
In my opinion, heels can say whatever they want. They're the bad guys. So.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was fine. He turned to -1, who was out there with 10, and basically said he was going to, I can't remember the rhyme, but he said he was going to get a butt whooping, which was funny because like he was being all edgy, and then he just like changes it to this little kid rap for the little kid.
Yeah.
And then he had
to hold -1 back because he was just about to explode. I saw a comment on Reddit, and it perfectly sums up -1 to me.
Yeah.
Have you ever played Borderlands?
Yes.
You know the psychos from Borderlands?
Yeah.
That's -1.
Wow.
These like those little skinny guys, and they're always like jumping around and like just ready to fight, and like people are having like hold them back. Yeah, especially with the mask and everything. That's what he reminds me of.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I get it. But this match was good. We're not going to go into detail. It was actually way better than I expected. Again, obviously not being a huge fan of the Acclaimed. I thought Max Caster held his own here. 10 is obviously a very good wrestler. It ended with Jack Evans coming from under the ring, hitting 10 with the boombox. Max Caster, who legitimately had no idea what was going on, because he did not like immediately jump on 10 and be like, oh yes, yeah, this is the, he like looked around like he was confused, got the 3, and then like was totally lost and was more like, I'm going to take this, This is great for me. But he didn't know what was going on. It was great.
Yeah, he did sell it very well.
Yeah. Also, Anthony Bowens is injured, which is why Max Caster is doing his own thing right now.
Ah, gotcha. I was wondering why they put him in a singles ladder match.
Yeah. And then Matt Hardy comes out, and he paid Jack Evans $4,200, which is funny because that's the amount that he said he would pay him on BTE. Nice little, you know.
Continuity.
Yeah. This immediately turned into Hangman Page and John Silver versus Matt Hardy and Mark Quinn. Although Miro did cut a promo, which I didn't see because they didn't show it. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, he basically just come out and told Charles he gave him a chance. And then he cut into Bulgarian, which is the most intimidating he's looked in the entire AEW run. He didn't end it with game over, which I hate. I hate that. I hate people having catchphrases like that. I really do.
Right.
If he would have just like yelled at him in Bulgarian and walked off, it would have been way more intimidating.
Right.
But, you know, it's wrestling. They got to do some corny stuff sometimes, I guess. But yeah, he's just a huge, huge, scary man. He didn't have a shirt on, and he's got all the muscles. Theoretically, he's going to kill poor Orange Cassidy and Charles the Butler.
You know what? As much as I feel like Orange Cassidy, you know, needs to stay over because he's a big star, right?
Yeah.
This you gotta do this with Miro. If you want to push the guy, this is what needs to be done. He's got to murder everybody.
Yeah, I don't think Orange Cassidy needs to win to stay over. I think he's a guy that can stay over even in defeat.
Right, but you can't pull Cesaro and make him lose for years and years. But he can lose a feud, especially to someone who people perceive as a star and is twice as big as him, at least twice as big. It's fine. They can lose this and it's not a problem.
Yeah, I agree. Especially with Trent out.
Yeah.
Nobody in their problem. Corner. They're going to have Penelope. She's going to get involved. She's going to do a poison runner or something.
Yep. So this tag team match was funny. Matt Hardy is a national treasure. Can I say that?
He was great in this match. And he had some great looking gear, too.
I love his, the gold pants. They're great.
Yeah.
I've always preferred Matt and Jeff Hardy, and everyone's always made fun of me. And yes, Jeff is the daredevil. He looked really cool when he was young. But Matt Hardy has the type of wrestler that has longevity. No disrespect to Jeff, but he just doesn't do anything for me anymore in the WWE. If he was, you know, doing his own thing, it might be different. This might be, other than Broken Matt, this might be the best version of Matt Hardy we have ever had.
Honestly, I prefer it over Broken Matt.
It
I
is
like
so
big
good.
Money Matt.
I love big money doofus. He's so good. Mark Quinn did all the work. Matt Hardy never wanted to be tagged in unless Quinn had the upper hand. Mm-hmm. It was just so well put together. And like, as far as I know, Quinn never questioned it. And I'm sure next week on BTE, we'll see something. Mm-hmm. But Quinn was just like, it made sense, but obviously it didn't. I loved everything about this match. Matt Hardy stayed away from Hangman Page for the longest time. You got that payoff where Hangman actually got his hands on Matt. It was so good. And of course the one shot with John Silver hugging Hangman.
Yes.
It's great. I loved it.
I really liked this match. I thought it was odd that this match is main eventing, but honestly, I think it worked.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, Matt Hardy and Hangman Page are two true stars.
Yeah.
Mark Quinn is great, and John Silver is very, very over. So I thought it was just fun.
Yeah, I think Mark Quinn's putting on some bulk, too.
Yeah.
With some muscle going, so it'll be interesting to see how that changes up his style. Yeah. But I didn't see Isaiah Cassidy at all, so I don't know if he's injured or what the deal is. Reynolds came out after the match, but I did not see Isaiah Cassidy at any point.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't know if he's maybe not there.
Yeah, very strange.
But, yeah, the show basically ended with Hangman pinning Quinn as he's staring at Matt Hardy. Then after the show is over, after the match is over, Matt Hardy comes in. He attacks Hangman with a microphone multiple times. And he said that, you know, he's not even going to be able to make it to the match on Sunday. And he turns around and tries to attack John Silver. But the entire Dark Order is out there. And they go to town on Matt Hardy. And then the only part of the show that I didn't really like, since, you know, a bunch of people were out there, all of the Tag Team Casino Royale people came out to remind us that we have a Casino Royale match on Sunday. I didn't need to be reminded. A 90-second segment would have worked just fine, like a promo package. But it's fine. I don't want to complain about it too much because I'm going to love the match. So
they do, you know, lean on the brawls too heavily at AEW.
They do, yeah. Yeah. But
it didn't take away from the show that much for me.
No, me neither. The whole show was good. Grade the show for me.
I think the last few weeks I've given it an A-. I think it's slightly above that. I think I'm going to give it an A. It wasn't a perfect show.
Right.
It wasn't like a packed show, really, but everything that was there really delivered, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I think it was a very good show, which I'd give an A.
I want to give the show an A+. Spoiler. Really? Okay. As you may have figured out when I said at the beginning of the show that this might be my favorite Dynamite ever. I loved it. Everything about this I loved. The show felt like a big deal because of Shaquille O'Neal and Tully Blanchard. There was no part on this show, as I said at the beginning of the show, where I'm like, this is dragging, or man, I wish this wasn't here. Oh, I'm bored. No, even 10 and frickin' Max Caster were awesome. I loved this show, and the little dinky ambulance thing and the little end of the show where 8 million people run in, it's fine. I'm cool with it. Because the show was a blast. I loved it. A+.
Okay. Yeah. I can't argue with what you said. I just don't think it was there for me. But yeah, it definitely over-delivered.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Awesome. So we're going to go. But we'll be back tomorrow with an AEW Revolution pre-show. We'll be back on Tuesday with a Revolution review show. Then, of course, we'll be back next Thursday, or excuse me, next Friday, for our Dynamite review. So, Indie Focus will be back after that. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Matt Sin. You can follow me at WrestleLifeMatt on Instagram and Twitter, and follow us all at WrestleLife Radio on Facebook and Instagram, and WrestleLife Pod on Twitter. Listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, including wherever you're listening to us right now. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you all have an absolutely wonderful day.
See you tomorrow.